Hi everyone, welcome to the FloridaProgressives.com podcast, episode 2 for April 28th, 2014. I'm Mike Itzen. This show delivers news and updates via interviews with activists around the state on the issues that you, the people of Florida, care about. This time is a focus on activism itself, elections, and the 60 days of Tallahassee lawmaking known as the Florida Legislature regular session. My guest knows these topics well. In 2011, he made it his mission to activate Florida citizens by making sure they know that they are not powerless and that there are plenty of actions that they can take besides voting. And I'm sure we'll be talking about some of those actions today. As usual, listeners, stick around for the end of the show to hear the list of actions, groups, and resources discussed on the show that can help you affect positive change. Ray Seaman created the Awake the State movement 4 years ago. Since then, in addition to the statewide rallies on each year's opening day of the legislative session, Awake the State has evolved into a series of local networks where members meet often to discuss matters that affect their communities and to plan action. He is active in Awake Marion, and there are Awake networks in Broward County, Miami, Palm Beach County, Pinellas, Sarasota, Tampa, and Pasco County. He is also the co-founder of Marion's United for Public Education, which recently got a school funding referendum on the November ballot. We'll talk about that and the elections coming up, as well as his work with Progress Florida, where he is the online director. Their Daily Clips email service that aggregates news and opinion from around the state may be the single best one-stop shop for Florida news. Ray Seaman, thanks so much for being here today.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. Glad to be on.
Awake the State had rallies the opening day of the legislative session. The final day of the regular session is this week on May 2nd. With a Republican majority, so much of what you do, what progressive activists do, is about limiting damage, about playing defense. How has that been this year?
Well, as usual, it's kind of a mixed bag. You know, I think just sort of going down the different issues that the legislature is dealing with, we could start with public education.
Okay.
Currently, the state has a quote-unquote budget surplus. In reality, I think many people would dispute whether that surplus is really real, in the sense that that we've really got these extra resources that we haven't already cut away in years past. But technically speaking, we do. There's around a $1.5 billion surplus in the budget this year, and some of that is supposed to go to education. Whether it really makes up for all the cuts that have been made over the last few years, it probably won't. We're still really operating at a net deficit, really, from where we were way as far back as 2007 and 2008. Literally, the amount we're spending per student this year, if the House and Senate budget drafts are any indication, will still actually be lower than where we were in 2007 and 2008. So we have yet to kind of surface from the recession in many ways there regarding education funding. But there's also additional mandates. There are additional attacks on public schools. And certainly the most notorious this session is the attempt to expand unaccountable private school vouchers, which has been a big push from House and Senate leadership. And of course, this expansion is coming with no accountability at all for the private schools that take these pre-tax dollars. So that's a big issue. There's always moves to continue to expand charter schools, despite the fact that, you know, the intention of charter schools are supposed to be experimental inside the public school system. They're not supposed to try and eat the public school system, which I think a lot of the charter management chains have been trying to do rather insidiously over the last few years. So that's education. On healthcare, unfortunately, there's really been no significant action on healthcare, despite the fact that hundreds of thousands of Floridians don't have access to the healthcare that they need, or at least that they could have if the state expanded healthcare under the Affordable Care Act. Currently, $51 billion of our tax dollars is literally sitting in Washington right now, not doing much of anything, while people literally are dying here in the state because of lack of access to health care. On the environment, there was hope at the beginning of the year that the legislature would introduce and pass comprehensive springs restoration legislation. As someone who lives in Ocala, right next door to world-famous Silver Springs, this is a huge issue for my part of the state, but for really in many parts of the state, because we have so many beautiful springs and waterways. Water has become an increasingly important issue in the state because we have less and less of it. There's overuse, overpumping, and there's also increased pollution in our springs as well from fertilizers and runoff. But unfortunately, that springs legislation has been watered down, pun intended, and unfortunately, that also seems to be stalled this year thanks to heavy resistance from agribusiness, local governments, as well as large property owners as well.
I just went to the springs last week at Salt Springs, and it's a shame that people are trying to take it away by polluting it.
Absolutely. You know, I've actually went and visited Silver Springs for the first time in several years. And just in that short, relatively short period of time, probably 6-7 years, even I have kind of noticed the increasing amount of sort of green fuzz that's growing on the sawgrasses and things in the springs. And it's right. It's very tragic to see because it's sort of a slow death that we're subjecting our springs to. And a lot of people forget that you know, before we had the Disney World and Universal Studios and these places, Florida, I mean, our springs were basically the things that really drew people to the state and were a major, major tourist attraction. But of course, it's bigger than that. I mean, we're giving up our natural heritage in many ways,
right,
for the sake of a powerful few.
Right.
So those are kind of the really significant issues. There are others out there. There's a laundry list of things that were not addressed this year.
So many.
Stand your ground, voting rights, all kinds of things. But for the most part, that's where we're at.
And just speaking more broadly, when you mention how, I'm just going to use the example of Rick Scott. When he first came into office, he slashed education just tons. And now that he's up for re-election, he is restoring some of it, but acting like he is the education governor, it seems to be a common strategy of people like him.
Yes, it is. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah, we've definitely seen a major shell game going on with education funding. As I said earlier, we have yet to truly recover from the recession in 2007 and 2008.
Yep. Okay, so there is another issue. I don't think it's part of the Florida legislature this year, but I saw you talking about it on Facebook last year. I was really curious about it. Can you describe what the nuclear tax is?
Yes, the nuclear tax.
Yes.
So this is it is. It's essentially a fee. It's a tax that is paid by utility customers to pay for nuclear power plants that really were never going to be built, essentially. This is something that was passed back in 2006 and still is on the books to this day, and utility customers in Florida are still paying for these nuclear power plant in Crystal River, Florida, and repairs to it, which were botched. And so we're paying billions of dollars basically to utilities for really nothing in return. So it's a very big deal, a very consumer oriented issue. And it's something that's very bipartisan in many ways in terms of the people who are opposed to it. But it's also a window into just how really unfair and narrow and backwards our state's energy policy is, really, at the end of the day. It's the big utilities, which completely run the show. They pretty much control the Public Service Commission, which is the state level group that governs a lot of energy and consumer policy here in Florida. And the reality is we're not doing anything to really incentivize truly renewable sources of energy like solar and biodiesel and wind and things of that nature, even tidal, some of these other things, and certainly not really incentivizing efficiency all that much as well. And so so the nuclear tax is very emblematic of this big problem and emblematic of the power that big utilities have over our energy policy, which we'll need to reverse.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you for that. Let's talk about activism in general. You created Awake the State 4 years ago after discussing the need with some education activists. When you look back on the 4 years of Awake the State, What are the issues that you've been advocating for that other people have too? It's not just you, that most resonated with the citizens that attended the rallies, like people that were uninvolved until they heard about it in their town or their city. Do you know
right.
what issues have been probably the biggest successes?
Well, I think over the last 4 years, the main thing that has really drawn people into Awake the State, and certainly with the first Awake the State rally on March 8th in 2011, which is the most successful one, was the fact that we were cutting the state budget at so many different levels, on healthcare, on education, on land conservation, and we were doing absolutely nothing to address the fact that we have these major corporate tax loopholes that exist in the state tax code And the corporate profits tax being as low as it is, and the exemptions that are there in the corporate profits tax, as well as with sales tax exemptions, that we weren't even talking about them or touching them at all, while cutting already a woefully underfunded public education system to smithereens, privatizing Medicaid, again, gutting land conservation funding. We had, you know, the Agency for Persons with Disabilities having record-long waiting lists. Children literally dying in the hands or under the care of the Department of Children and Families because there weren't enough caseworkers. So all of that really is just sort of, you know, the Fed, these inhumane, immoral budget cuts where we're really driving a lot of that early activism. I think since then, you know, education funding has always been a big thing for our folks. But I would also argue that this year in particular, Medicaid expansion, healthcare expansion really became a major driving force here as well, because there's a very strong moral component to this as well. These are mostly poor working class people and families who just aren't wealthy enough really to afford private health insurance, even heavily subsidized private health insurance, but are too quote unquote rich for Medicaid, which provides basic healthcare services to poorer folks. And that resonates with a lot of people because we've already paid for it through our tax dollars. And the federal government is essentially footing all of the bill for the first 3 years and then 90% of it afterwards. You know, the fact that we're not accepting those funds to expand healthcare to people who need it, it rightly strikes people as a genuine moral outrage. And I think you'll be seeing more activism on that front in the coming years. People are not dissuaded at all. The fact that the legislature isn't taking action on this, they know it needs to get done, and they're probably going to see it through to the end.
Especially when you see state after state accepting the same money, and where our taxes go to those states, but you know they are ignoring the poorest people in Florida. So,
yeah, absolutely.
The issue that got me involved with Awake the State was last year with voting. I mean, I remember watching in 2012 the horrible situations throughout Florida when it came to people having to wait in lines and stuff like that. So I was really happy that an organization like Awake the State was taking action in terms of trying to get people to have the access to vote and to be able to vote in a timely manner. Okay. As I mentioned before, you are the co-founder of Marians United for Public Education. Can you tell me a little bit about the school funding referendum that you and your group succeeded in putting on the November ballot? And more broadly, what is it about the local level that is so important for democracy?
Well, no, and I appreciate the question, Mike. I mean, I think folks understand that in Florida, and my county, Marion County, is not immune to this. All counties in Florida have suffered tremendously deep cuts to their local public school systems over the last 7 years. In Marion County, however, we've been particularly hard hit. You know, we're a large county land-wise. I mean, the county itself is bigger than Rhode Island. A lot of people don't realize that. And we're one of the largest school districts in America. Florida's kind of unique in this regard because our counties serve as school districts. It's not sort of subdivided beneath that like it is in many other parts of the country. So the Marion County Public School District is in charge of educating 40,000 kids spread out over an area bigger than Rhode Island. And we're the largest employer, you know, in Marion County. We've got over 5,000 teachers and teacher aides, administrators, janitors, maintenance people, bus drivers, et cetera. And over the last 7 years, because we're a landlocked county, our property values aren't particularly as high as the folks who have coasts. so we have really borne the brunt of these cuts more than many counties. And currently today, literally as we speak, we are the number one violator of the class size amendment in the whole state. We have some of the biggest class sizes in the state. We're purposely violating the class size amendment because it's actually cost effective to do so at this point. And art and music, our library, media services, physical education have all been cut in half at all of our elementary schools. So we have teachers who are literally sharing schools today. So Marians United for Public Education, which was involved in a very short campaign in 2012, to pass two little half-mill referenda on the August primary ballot that the school board sponsored, those very narrowly failed, which resulted in around 150 teacher aides and 160 first-year teachers lost their jobs, temporarily lost their jobs last year as a result of the failure of those two referenda. So what Marians United started doing last summer is we started meeting biweekly, every other week, with different community stakeholders. We decided we were going to write our own referendum this time, and we weren't going to wait for the school board, which is historically very skittish about anything involving tax referenda, because Marion County is a conservative county, and we historically reject most tax referenda that come our way. But we decided we wanted to do this right. So we what we ended up producing was a school funding referendum that was double the size, actually, of one of the half mills in August. So we produced a one mill school funding referendum that's specifically targeted to fund reading, art, music, library, media, PE, and vocational programs, in addition to hiring full-time state-certified teachers so we can meet class size standards, and also paraprofessionals like teacher aides. And really, this is it is undoubtedly, in my mind, having researched the history on this, the most progressive, most comprehensive ballot measure that our community has seen in 25 years.
That's great.
So it's a very big deal. And our community hasn't passed a property tax referendum for anything since 1987. So it's an incredible thing. And we were able to get it through our school board and our county commission unanimously. And that's a pretty big deal because both of these bodies reflect the politics of the community. So it's both of these bodies are very conservative, very cautious when it comes to tax issues. But the situation had gotten to the point where you really just couldn't deny this stuff anymore. So now we have something called the Yes for Marion Schools Committee, whose sole job it is to try and pass this referendum. And we're out there campaigning in the community as we speak. And to answer sort of the latter part of your question, you know, all this demonstrates why it's so important. It's so important for progressives to be organizing at the local level, because we have very serious needs at the local level throughout this whole state of Florida and really throughout the country. And particularly in a place like Florida, which is still, it would, I think, correctly be argued, very gerrymandered at the state level, that the future of progressive ideas and the progressive movement is going to come from cities and counties. And that's going to bubble up and produce better candidates, better elected officials who can then move into the state legislature and do bigger, better things there. So the kind of things that Marians United has done, although Marians United is by no means exclusively a progressive group, where it's actually pretty bipartisan in its makeup, but certainly the policies and the ideas that we push, I would argue, are pretty progressive stuff. So yeah, I mean, I think the local organizing is the way that And it's absolutely critical to what we do down the road.
Going back to the state level, we were talking about how local communities kind of interact with the state level. But when it comes to how the state level interacts with a national agenda or a corporate international agenda, you know, we have groups like the American Legislative Exchange Council. We have groups like the State Policy Network. And listeners, I'm going to link to both of those at the end of the show if you haven't heard of those two groups, so you can learn more about those. But Ray, your job, you're part of Progress Florida. You're the online director for that. And that's part of a, correct me if I'm wrong, that's part of a nationwide state network, right? Progress Now?
Yes.
How important is it to, I mean, you know, campaign finance laws are worse than ever, you know, Citizens United and a recent one just now. Sometimes the problems of Florida are not unique. They're happening in every other state, it seems like. So given all this outside money and all this corporate interest, what kind of response is needed to help protect democracy?
Well, yeah, this organizing at the state level is absolutely critical. Progress Florida, as you mentioned, Mike, is part of the Progress Now National Network of state-based online progressive advocacy organizations. Certainly the progressive movement realized, I think, roughly after the sort of the 2004 election debacle, that there needed to be more organizing at the state level. And so a lot of the different Progress Now state groups were formed after that. Progress Florida came along in early 2008. And, you know, a lot of people don't And I think for some reason, you know, progressives, it's taken a little taken a while for us to really figure out the importance of the states, largely because progressive policy and ideas for so long have been almost exclusively focused at the national level. Largely, we believe very strongly in federal action, in national action, dealing with national problems. But while we were doing that, you know, the conservatives were organizing at the state level, because obviously their philosophy is much more states' rights, state power, and devolving power away from Washington. And because of, you know, for better and for worse, I would argue probably mostly for the worse, conservative sort of revolution that took place starting in the mid-70s and continuing through the 90s and early 2000s. You know, a lot of power was devolved to the state. I think progressives have realized that we've got to be organized at the state level as well. And I think a lot of people are now beginning to understand just how much policy and important actions take place at the state level. And I think for many, many progressives, that realization came in the wake of the 2010 midterm elections, when the Tea Party was really swept into power in a number of key state legislatures and proceeded to enact very draconian, reactionary, extremist legislation attacking unions, attacking women's rights, trying to privatize education, obstructing the Affordable Care Act, and so on and so forth. And everybody kind of woke up and realized, oh my gosh, you know, state legislatures are really important, and they are. One of my analogies I like to tell people is that people have a sort of relationship with national politics because it's in the headlines all the time. Have a relationship with local politics because it's in their backyard, it's in their local newspaper, but the state is this very nebulous mid-range area. So an organization like Progress Florida is there through services like our Daily Clip service and through our many actions that we target to the state legislature on key issues. We're kind of educating and empowering people to take action on key issues and at the state level, and in the process, helping people understand why it's so important that progressives are organized at the state level.
Right. You mentioned the 2010 midterms. Those were so critical because of the census and the redistricting. And
yes.
It can just – people need to go out and vote this year, which segues into my last question, Ray. What do you hope to see or expect to see come election time this year when it comes to state-level Florida politics?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm expecting incremental progress, I think, in 2014. I'm not expecting sort of a massive sea change. I am expecting probably a new governor, you know, not knock on wood. You know, I certainly would very much like to see that. But also some new faces in the legislature and also holding some of the gains that we made in the legislature in 2012. That's going to be a main objective. Certainly, you know, there are two very important constitutional amendments that are going to be on the ballot, one on land conservation and the other on medical marijuana. That'll be really interesting to see how both of those turn out. If polls are any indication, both of them will probably pass, which will also have an important impact on the state. And I think at the local level, you know, we've got a lot of interesting people running for county commission and city council. We've got things like, you know, right here where I am in Marion County, we have our school funding referenda that's on the ballot. So I'm expecting I'm not really expecting massive conservative gains, which I know is a little bit counter to the conventional wisdom right now. I'm not expecting a huge wave for us either, but I do think on net, I think we'll actually do okay come November. That's my expectation, and I'm knocking on wood as I say that, Mike.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Ray, for your time today and for serving Florida so well.
All right, Mike. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And now, calls to action and resources. MarionsUnited.org is the home of the ballot measure to restore education funding in Marion County. Best of luck to them in getting those class sizes smaller and those children their much-needed resource programs restored. The 8 local Awake the State networks are at awakethestate.com/local. Some of the current campaigns on progressflorida.org are stopping illegal fracking in the Everglades, stopping private school vouchers, and expanding health care. For more information on the state network they're a part of, go to progressnow.org. Some of the Twitter accounts you can look for are Progress Florida, Awake the State, Marians United, and Ray Seaman. Issues Ray mentioned, ignored by the legislature, are Springs restoration, Medicaid expansion, Stand Your Ground, and voting rights, all while they boast of their supposed $1.5 billion surplus. Issues pushed by the legislature are voucher expansion and corporate charter school chain expansion, and over the years, tax breaks for corporations and drastically scaling back the Florida Forever land preservation program. Through their neglect, like Ray said, we saw the deaths of children via the Department of Children and Families and record-long waits at the Agency for Persons with Disabilities. I was going to say call, write, and visit your legislators, but really it's the last week of the session. Replace the legislators who did this in November. They tend to have an R next to their names. Find your senator at flsenate.gov and your representative at myfloridahouse.gov. It is great to see that the first two state constitutional amendments on the ballot this November will be progressive. One about preserving land and the second about medical marijuana. Learn more at ballotpedia.org by searching for Florida 2014. More information on the nuclear tax boondoggle can be found at stopnucleartax.com. The things I mentioned in passing throughout the interview are linked to on floridaprogressives.com in the calls to action section on this post, reports on ALEC, the State Policy Network, gerrymandering, and campaign finance reform. And now something unrelated to the interview but time sensitive. On May 10th and 11th in Orlando is a free training on finance and how to run a campaign. It's by the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. Deadline to apply is April 28th, which will be too late for most people hearing this, but I just wanted to get the word out on this great training program called P100 Training that the PCCC has been doing across the country. More information can be found at p100training.com. Turn that anger about the sad state of Florida politics into action. There's no time to get depressed. Use resources like Progress Florida and the PCCC, but most importantly, commit to local and state action, and we can turn the tide on the influence big money and corporate interests have on this country and this state. FloridaProgressives.com is the home to this podcast. There's no real schedule to the series. They're just ready when they're ready, but episode 3 might be out in a few weeks. In the meantime, check out the transcripts for these first two episodes. Susan and Ray are very knowledgeable, and what they had to say is very informative. This royalty-free music is by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. The track is called Unity, and it is licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. I said last episode that you can find this podcast on iTunes, but that's a work in progress. It is, however, available on feeds like RSS. There's also the FloridaProgressives.com Facebook fan page, and I'll be posting there every time there's a new episode. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Idson, last name spelled E-I-D-S-O-N, and send me an email at Michael.C.Idson@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.